This is Gene Lin Yang, and you're listening to Welcome to Comics.
You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 282. This week, we talk about New Superman, Made in China. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now, the cast begins.
Oh, so in comic book related news, Marvel has found its cast for The Runaways.
Ooh.
And they're going to start filming it pretty soon.
Oh, nice.
And it's going to be on Hulu. I think it's going to be on a Hulu, but then I think it's going to be on some network as well. My only complaint is that the character, like the person who's playing Molly, looks like she's too old to play Molly. But I guess they could just make her older for the show.
Yeah,
and it's tough to get a kid that young.
Yeah. So apparently Jeff Loeb is one of the executive producers for it. And he was also executive producer on Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
He's done a lot of good TV work.
Yeah.
He's solid.
He basically runs like Marvel. He kind of ran Marvel's TV arm for a long time. And I mean, we've read some of his stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm pretty excited for it.
That's exciting news.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, I didn't realize Jeff Loeb was going to be working on it and that he was the guy behind...
It's interesting. If you watch a lot of Marvel cartoons and stuff, you'll see his name in the credits.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah.
He's got a big ass IMDb page.
Another thing that I'm kind of disappointed about is, so I saw previews of different Funko Pops that are coming out pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And one of the characters in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is Ego. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Ego.
No.
But at least in the comics, he's called Ego the Living Planet. So he's literally a planet with like a face with a mustache and stuff. The Funko Pop is like a guy. And so I'm kind of sad that it's not like a planet with a mustache.
Wow.
But he's literally like a purple planet with a mustache. If you like Google image search Ego the Living Planet, it'll be pretty hilarious.
Here you go. Ego the Living Planet.
Yeah.
It's not like Mojo at all.
Mogo?
Yeah.
No, not at all. It like literally has a giant face.
Oh my god. Some of these artist renditions are fantastic.
But apparently he's played by Kurt Russell, though, so I think it's Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell's in it. Now I have to look it up.
Oh, man. Apparently there's one where he faced off against another planet that was a face. And they're, like, smashing into each other. What comic is this? We might have to read this.
I want to read it. I love that in some of them he's like an old man with a goatee, but in like some of the Google image search art, he just looks like the moon from Majora's Mask. Like, what?
Oh, apparently he was a Nova before. New Xandar.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
Earth becomes Ego.
Kurt Russell is playing Ego the Living Planet.
Oh, Ego versus Alter Ego from Astonishing Thor 1-5.
That sounds awful. We should read it.
The mysterious cosmic entity known as the Stranger appeared as well and informed Ego that he created him and his twin brother. So there's ego and alter ego.
Of course.
Oh my god, comics, you're fantastic.
Oh, it's like a telenovela.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, we could do an ego series. I'm bookmarking this. Done.
So yeah, that's some exciting stuff that's coming out soon.
Hell yeah. All right, do you guys want to talk about this week's comic?
Yes, let's do it.
Yes.
I am excited about this.
This week's comic.
This week, we read New Superman, Made in China by Jin Yang with art from Victor Bogdanovich. Bogdanovic? Bogdanovic, I'm going to go with that. And, man, I was really psyched to read this to begin with because it's Jin Yang, our boy. And I was... I went through an arc. At the beginning, I was really excited. And then I was like, oh, this is getting kind of predictable. And I, you know, the middle couple of issues, like, I can see where this is going. It's going to be so easy. And then at the end, I was like, wait, that was fantastic.
Yeah. I was so surprised.
It took some unexpected turns. I mean, there were some things, like, I kind of saw coming. Well, okay. That's being unfair. It was hinted at during the story, like leading up to it, and so I wasn't surprised when certain things were revealed. But man, it like took some interesting turns, and I really liked it.
Yeah,
especially at the end.
Which one?
Like the very last page.
Dr. Omen?
Turns out Dr. Omen is
his
yes.
Mom. Like, I feel like we're suddenly avoiding spoilers in this
for no good reason.
Discussion. Like, why? The one where his dad is, like, the main villain was kind of, like, maybe he's going to be, maybe he's not. I agree with David, but, oh, man. And you know the other cool surprising thing? It's still not clear, like, 6 issues in, like, who the quote-unquote heroes and villains are.
Yeah, and
I'm not sure who the antagonist is, but in a good way.
Right. Well, I think the only person who's clearly bad is Human Firecracker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
one could argue that like Blue Condor and some of the other Freedom Fighters are maybe not that they're bad guys, but they definitely do bad things in this comic.
I mean, in comics, the ends don't justify the means. You got to do everything good, which is something Keenan comes to. But what I love about that Dr. Omen at the end, what I love about it the most, okay, A, you don't see it coming that it's the mom, and that throws you for a loop. But what I love is, up until that page, you thought you knew who was the good guy. Like, you thought you knew. New Superman's a good guy. Batman and Wonder Woman are going to back up New Superman, and they're going to be the good guys. And the Freedom Fighters were kind of good guys. I don't know. They're in a gray area, but that's common enough in comics. But you thought you knew that the Ministry of Self-Reliance was bad. You thought you knew that. And at the end of the page, you're like, what the fuck is good? No, I don't know who the bad. Like, it throws everything you thought you had figured out over the last 6 issues. Because it did put it in murky waters and let you figure it out. And when you thought you had... Nah, you didn't. Not even a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I especially love because it follows... I feel like the Writers Guild being the Freedom Fighters was a feint. Like, because it's hinted at so heavily. It's easy to figure out, you know? And it's like, oh, of course. Oh, yeah, I see this coming. And, you know, I think in, like, issue 3, I figured it out. I was like, oh, great. And I'm going to have to read 3 more issues until they finally reveal. Like, I thought the end of issue 6 was going to be, oh, my God, the Freedom Fighters are actually the writers group. And I was pleasantly surprised that the very next issue, he figured it out, too.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's a feint because Jin Yang gives you that easy one. So then you think, oh, I don't have to think that hard with this comic, or it lulls you so that when the Dr. Omen bomb gets dropped, you're like, wait a second, I was not expecting this level. you stop looking at it that way because you think you have it figured out.
And like, and you know, I saw that his dad was going to be Flying Dragon General. Is that his name? Flying Dragon General?
I know Flying Dragon's in there.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, it was clear to me that he was going to be the dad.
Yeah.
After we first encountered him. But his dad really, like, turns around real quick when he sees that he was putting, like, both Keenan and his dad kind of realize the error of their ways individually and come together. Yeah. And I think that's what makes the battle on the airplane, like, really sad. I mean, it's good to see that Dr. Omen, like, has the dad maybe in stasis or something, so there's a chance he can come back. Mm-hmm. But, man, it was really sad to see him, to see the dad die, because it's like Keenan got what he was hoping for. You know, he wanted his father to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And finally they got that, and then the dad dies, you know. And I was thinking about this morning after, you know, after I had slept after reading it, and I thought, man, that's like, Superman's got to be an orphan, like, no matter where he's from. But it's, I'm excited. I hope that the dad can come back, because he seems... The interesting thing is, like, if you... You know, I was going to say, the Freedom Fighters don't see themselves as the bad guys because they think what they're doing is the right thing. Mm-hmm. They're fighting for their ideals. And a lot of supervillains are not. You know, there's supervillains who, like, steal money and, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Originally I was going to compare them to Lex Luthor, right? Because he's Superman. He's, you know, regular Superman's main villain. But the thing is, Lex also thinks he's doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
He really, he genuinely wants to do the right thing for Metropolis. But the problem he has is that he also is really hung up on Superman because he wants humanity to rely on itself instead of... Or he wants humanity to stand up on its own merits instead of relying on an alien. But...
Yeah.
You know, Lex is very mustache twirly, where... Or he can be. Mm-hmm. I think Lex can also be a very complex and layered and interesting villain. But he often comes across as very mustache twirly. Where, you know, Human Firecracker does, but the rest of the Freedom Fighters don't. And I think it's interesting that instead of doing the obvious thing of making, like, a Legion of Doom analog, they pick the Freedom Fighters who are, like...
who are an actual hero team.
They are a hero team. They have freedom in the name, and they're led by Uncle Sam, right?
Yeah.
And other than Uncle Sam, like, and Flying Dragon General, the rest of them are, like, straight, like, it's clear who is who. I mean, you know, Blue Condor and Black Condor, Sunbeam and the Ray, Ghost Girl, Ghost Woman and Phantom Girl,
mm-hmm.
You know... Human Bomb and Human Firecracker. So it's an interesting choice, and what's cool about it is it's, I think that if you are a person who is familiar with the Freedom Fighters team from the US and you see this, it does throw you for a loop. And, you know, other than, well, okay, that's not true. We see the Freedom Fighters doing bad things, but most of the time what they're doing is, like, kidnapping people who they think are leading China down the wrong path.
Down the path of oppression.
Right, down the path of oppression. And when you see them do really bad things, like the Folding Paper Man, he kills one of the guards, right? And I thought, man, that's...
And he's the Human Doll analog.
Yeah, he's Human Doll. You know, he kills this guard, and I thought, man, that's pretty bad. But then I thought, well, they are escaping from being imprisoned where there's no chance they'll ever be treated fairly. So yeah, maybe except that
he enjoys it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. You could take it from their perspective and be like, oh, well, you know, I mean, if you're looking at their narrative, they're trying to save their country from oppression, and that guard is an agent of the oppressor, and therefore it's okay to kill him. Like, if we were reading a Freedom Fighters comic and it was flipped and they were, like, escaping, I don't know, Guantanamo that was controlled by an evil dictator or, like, whatever, you know, like, then it would be totally okay to just kill some guards because the guards would be an agent, like... If you're looking at it from their perspective, it is, you can rationalize it as a heroic thing, sure, but you don't smile and take pride in your work in killing the dude. Like, that's what signals it to you.
But the thing is...
But it's not, he's enjoying the fact that he's killing someone, I think. That's what it comes across as to me. And, like, that is bad.
Yeah, I could see
it. Yeah, I think political climate has a lot to do with righteousness, though. I mean, in America right now, I've been seeing a lot of people being like, punch all the Nazis, kill them. And it's like, well, these guys aren't real Nazis, A. And, you know, but it's this idea that, like, assaulting someone is appropriate because, I mean, their views are bad. Their views are arguably quite evil. But, like, this idea that if you're doing it for the good of your country, then it's, like, fine to enjoy it. And I, you know, obviously this comic was published way before that and probably not, you know, what, Jean Yang had in mind. But I think that we see some of that. Like, he kills the guard and he's clearly sadistic, but I think it's also one of those, like, human nature things where people are like, well, I'm doing this for the greater good. Therefore, it's okay to, like, take pleasure in doing this evil thing. I don't know. I feel like Folding Paper Man and Human Firecracker are kind of like a little not so sadistic in this, and the others seem chill. Because one thing that's interesting is on the plane, they're fighting and the Great Ten show up. And I think normally the trope would be these three kids now have to use their wits because they have to subdue the villains and convince the Great Ten that, you know, everything's cool so they can save the people on the plane. Except that's not what happens here. They turn to the quote-unquote villains and say, hey, these people are going to die if you don't do something. And then, you know, the freedom fighters, they just immediately are like, okay, we're going to help these people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't argue, they don't fight, they just immediately make the decision that the civilian lives are more important than their current fight. So I think we also see some degree of morality in them as well.
Yeah, and it's a good, they make a good analog for the U.S. Freedom Fighters. I mean, a lot of the Freedom Fighter stories, the U.S. Freedom Fighter stories are revolving around, like, how do I put this? Like, freeing the country from a subversive plot to overthrow democracy, you know? Like, they are fighting people who seem to be operating in the shadows. And these freedom fighters are operating against a secret ministry within the government, the Ministry of Self-Reliance, that isn't official. So the analogy works. It's just they're not quite as heroic all the time.
Well, I think this is actually the brilliance of setting this in China. Because, so, you know, China came out of, like, its Maoist period at the end of the 20th century. It's becoming more globalized, becoming more open to Western influence, especially after they, like, opened relations with the West after, like, Nixon visited, I think, in the 70s. And one thing right now is, like, for instance, if you think about how Chinese government works, so listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, because I am I'm no expert on anything, really. But I'm pretty sure right now in China, you can't hold public office unless you're a member of the Communist Party. And they, like, kind of limit who can be in charge through that. And it's very, like, kind of this unified government. And it is a huge bureaucracy. And of course, individuals have their own opinions, but it's not like the US or Britain, for instance, where we have these, like, big opposing parties that are, like, a huge influence. And I think that doing that, you know, setting this in China where it's like this government is more monolithic and then having these ideals basically set up right? Like, there's democracy versus the more, like, communist approach. And framing them as, like, good people believe in both of these. I think that it makes it so that you can have heroes and villains kind of, like, flip-flop on who's being good any given day, because then it really focuses more on their actions rather than their ideals.
Hmm.
So, like, in an American comic, especially in the setups of Marvel and DC, like, unless they're doing an alternate dystopian other world type of thing, or there's, like, a secret rogue branch, you know, like when Hydra takes over all of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
And Hydra is actually run by Nazis, so now we have, like, Nazi America. It's the government is the good guys. American government is, like, the stand-up people, and the heroes would obviously never go against them because they're good and the president's good, and, you know, we all love Uncle Sam, blah, 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 and anyone we're fighting is going to be, like, some rogue thing. And we kind of see that with the self-reliance agency, but you kind of get the sense that, like, there's still some level of government condonement, even if they're not official.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like the Great Ten are immediately rushing in to put a stop to these villains, right? There's an acceptance that, like, they have to be tolerated.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess General and Iron didn't even know that this was happening.
Yeah, yeah. So I think putting it in this political climate where there's multiple viewpoints about how you should run your country, and they both have their merits, makes it so you can't really just clearly have, like, a hero and a villain like you would where Captain America fights Hydra, right? Mm-hmm. But that makes for a good dynamic because it focuses Kenan as the protagonist, and everyone around him now has the potential to flip-flop as, yeah, like, a friend or an antagonist, any, you know, depending on the situation and what values each party holds. And I think that is a really cool thing about this comic.
Yeah, and that setup also works as a good foil for Kenan Kong as a hero. Like, we've talked before about the villain and the texture of the villain and how fighting the villain helps define the hero. And Kenan is not sure of himself in any which way except that he's a smarmy, rude, like, gross dumbass. Mm-hmm. Like, except for those things, he doesn't know what's right and wrong. He doesn't really know. Like, in the beginning, he throws the can. He's like, what the fuck am I doing? Why did I do that? He just beat this guy up, and then he saves the kid. Like, he doesn't have that compass either, at least not in a way that he outwardly understands. So, as he defeats villains, quote-unquote villains who can flip-flop either side and allies who can flip-flop either way, he's going to have to define himself as he goes based on what he's fighting against. Which is why I love the last issue of this comic, because he sees the gray area, he confronts it, he figures it out and how he interacts with it and what it means to him. And it's great because I love Kenan's, I'm pronouncing it like Kenan as in Kenan and Kel, but it might be Kenan?
Kenan.
I was trying to figure it out too in my head, yeah, and it always just came out as Kenan, and I was like, all right.
Yeah.
But I like that his character development feels really natural, and it happens at a believable pace. Like, I think it helps me that this trade wasn't 4 issues. It was 6. And it takes a solid 3 or 4 issues for him to stop being a mega creep, and another 2 or 3 to him that, like, to have any actual kind of motive that he came, like, he basically became Superman because YOLO, right? Like,
yeah.
And I mean, he had a deeper reason, but he didn't know what it was. He had to find his way to it, you know? In the moment, he was like, yeah, fuck it, why not? Sure. But he realized that he did it because he wanted his father to notice him. The whole, like, and from throwing the can, that was his motive. And it took him 6 issues to figure that out for himself. And he figures it out the moment he loses his father, basically. But I love that it doesn't happen overnight. I love that this 6 issues of development in him mirrors the development of the quote-unquote villain. And how even at the end, he's not sure of himself, because it all gets flipped as you find out the villain's actually not the person you thought was the villain, Dr. Roman, is not at all. And I think that the ambiguousness of the Freedom Fighters in this does a really good job of highlighting Keenan's character, and I love Keenan in this so much. I love him. He's one of my new favorite characters in the comics. He's such an asshole.
Oh my god. When I was kind of like doing my preliminary research for this comic before actually sitting down to read it, I encountered a lot of like these weird salty comments about it. Like, why is everything gotta be so politically correct now? And oh my god, to anyone who thought that, just open this comic.
Yeah, like, actually read it.
He is not.
Yeah, what is who? I don't know which one of you put it, but he's like, the quote, if you ladies wanted to get a better look at my physique, you could have just asked.
Yeah, I put those quotes in there because they were great. I was going through this and I was like, these are perfect. Like, all you need is like a handful of lines to know who Keenan is. That was when he was in the, when Omen and Ming Ming first put him in the costume and they were like, how does it fit? And he's like, if you wanted a closer look, get his ass. Like, oh, that's disgusting. Yeah. And then when he talks to, when he first sees Wonder Woman, that was my other favorite one. That containment suit fits you like a Wonder Woman. Oh, God. That's corny so and bad. Disgusting.
All of his pickup lines are really bad, and I love it. You know, it's that crudeness that works, though, because, it obviously shows he's not Superman. They're not just like, okay, here's another Superman. But I think it immediately throws the argument of like diversity for diversity's sake out the window, because he's not just like Superman Clark Kent but Chinese now. He is his own character and he has his own story and personality. And like, you know, we've talked about it on this podcast a few times, like how to do a character well and how to make them not just like a trope, because Superman himself is a trope. Like, he's for, you know, justice in the American way. Well, Kanan's not for the, like, quote-unquote Chinese way. It's never even discussed what that is, right? Like, he is a person first and foremost, and I think that's what drives this comic. It's just his bad decision-making over and over that actually moves the plot along, but it seems so natural.
Because he's a fucking dumbass.
Yeah.
So stupid. Well, first off,
right, he's like basically beating up his classmate for lunch money. And then for some like that puts him in the position where Blue Condor's there. And then he throws the can because he has daddy issues. And then he, you know, takes the powers because he doesn't even think twice. He's like, yeah, that sounds neat. And then he outs himself to the news as a superhero because he has a crush on the reporter.
Because she's a hottie.
Yeah, and well, and the other thing is, like, it actually shows depth to his character because he does this terrible series of shallow things, right? Like a moron. But then when he is brave, he's brave. Like when he's in the car with the little girl.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh shit, you know, she's about to lose her mom and I know how that feels. Like, that actually had a lot of emotional impact for me watching that. Like, I felt very, it made me verklempt.
Well, and I think that moment works because it follows all these others. Like, you see you see him totally as a person. You don't just see, like you're saying, you don't see a trope. Like, we see Keenan's bad things. So when the good things come out, it's 100% believable because it's not like, oh, he's just coated in the sheen of perfection or whatever. No, like, he's a dude and a shitty dude at that, and we know it and we've seen it. So when something good happens, it feels instantly genuine.
Yeah, and it's clearly a veneer. So, like, you kind of see this armor of assholishness that he wears. And then when he drops that and becomes a real person, I think it's really impactful. And he does that a few times. Like, he's open, finally, that he wants his father's attention as a human, you know, like, or he's like, I don't want this little girl to lose her mother. And those two moments I thought were really powerful because it shows him, like you said, as like a complete person. So, yeah, I loved his character, not just for the humor, but also because he's not just one thing. He's really complex. Mm-hmm. And that's really obvious from the start.
He needs to meet Booster Gold as soon as possible. That is my dream team up in my head right now, is those two. Oh my god. That'd be the best. I just imagine them hitting the town with shitty pickup lines.
I feel like Keenan would just immediately, like, look up to Booster as a mentor. He's like, yeah. You're the superhero I want to be, kind of thing.
You've made it work. You got sponsors. that's what he would be excited about, is that A, Booster got sponsors, and there was that time that Booster married what is the term? That he was a gold digger and it worked.
Oh yeah, that was from, wasn't that in, that was an Identity Crisis, right?
Yes, yeah. It was.
Like, yeah, that's exactly who it would like to look up to.
He was a kept man for a while, right?
Yeah.
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 I think my favorite character in this comic was the Batman, Baxi. I don't pronounce things well, even if I can read it. I have no idea how this language works, so I don't know these names. But the Batman.
I'm pretty sure it's a Z sound, not an X sound.
Baishi. But I like him. And it flows into why I like Keenan in this too a little bit more. Like, this Batman, he's Batman. He functionally in the story works in a lot of the similar ways that Batman does, in the regular Justice League. But without the grimdarkness, I don't know what his backstory is. He could just be an orphan too, or he could just be a dude. I think he's just a dude.
Yeah.
And he has zero fighting skill. Like, he is overweight and out of shape and doesn't really ever fight. But he works as Batman in that he is always prepared, and he is nothing but pure resourcefulness and ingenuity. And I love it because for those things, and the way they function in a story, he doesn't have to be fit. He doesn't have to look like a superhero at all. He could weigh as much as I do. He could have my physique, and he could still hack into televisions and turn them on to show Keenan what's going on outside of his house. He could still invent and build all these devices. He doesn't have to be a kung fu master or anything. And for that matter, Keenan is relatively fit, but I mean, he's not built like Superman either. And for his powers to work, he doesn't have to have, like, the point of Superman, he's a solar battery of energy. You don't have to have any physique for that to work. You could look like fuck all anything. And I like that those tropes of the comic book genre are thrown out the window in this. We have a protagonist in Batman who is, like, not just out of shape, not just, like, out of shape, but overweight. And he works just as well in the story as Batman does. And Keenan works, I mean, he doesn't work as well as Superman does because he's not figuring out how his powers work yet. But, I mean, he's clearly not built like Clark Kent. And it's perfectly fine. And I love the diversity in body types in this. Because there's no reason for it. There's no reason at all. And I'm sure we're going to talk about this later on, I think, in the next series when we go outside the Big Two and reread Faith. We're going to talk about body types and comics in there too, I think. But I loved Batman in this, and I love that he's such a smart ass too.
Yeah, I also like, so Keenan is always going around like mocking people for how they look, right? Yeah. Like, or he's very interested. He says tubby a lot. Yeah, he calls Batman tubby. He calls the airline
kid,
they call him Fatty all the time. And, like, he's always looking at, you know, the female characters, like, hey. And it's just, like, this kind of superficial sense. But what I love about Batman is he just doesn't even care. He just shrugs it off every time.
Yeah.
You know, like, or sometimes maybe he's like, don't call me Tubby, I have a name. But it's just, he's like, whatever, man, I am way cooler than you.
Because he'll have a device, just like Bruce would. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
Well, no, he knows that he's the better superhero.
Oh, yeah.
Between him and Superman.
Yeah, like, he's so confident in his Batmanness that he doesn't give a shit what Keenan is like how he's mocking him, and I love that. Because that is a Batman trait, right? Like, Batman don't give a fuck.
No.
Well, Batman, I mean, Batman knows, like, Bruce Wayne Batman knows that he's, like, the shit. But it's not always, I think it's arguable from a reader's perspective. But in this, Batman is clearly superior to Superman. In
yes.
In so many ways.
Yeah.
And this Wonder Woman definitely has some kind of truth power, right? Because, I mean, the other thing we're figuring out is these characters are very different, but the essence of them is the same. And the part of the essence of Diana Prince is that she has a truth power in the lasso. And I don't think Dalen, this Wonder Woman, doesn't have truth in her lasso per se. Her lasso works differently, but she has some kind of truth power. She has to.
I don't think so.
No?
Because we don't see it on anyone else.
You think Keenan's just giving it up because she's a hottie?
Well, he also did it for Lainey Len.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I think anytime he sees a lady that he likes, he just is like, here's what's happening.
I don't know. But, like, I mean, she's not his type, though, I don't think.
I think that it's hinted a couple times that he finds her attractive at the very least. Or like, as a person, attractive. Like, he likes her. But I don't know. I don't necessarily see that happening, because I think the reporter's probably going to end up being, like, a love interest.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of feel like... Oh, go on.
I feel like Keenan's going to keep trying to make her the love interest, but it's never going to work.
That's fair.
She's like, why don't you graduate from high school first?
Yeah.
Well, she's always like, who are you again? Right? Like, unless it can get her a news story, she's like, I don't even care, man.
I thought it was cool to see the Great Ten in here, because...
Yeah.
We read Great Ten before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've come up before, I mean, in other things.
Well, we saw them in New 52? 52.
Yeah. Or not New 52, 52.
No, regular 52. Old 52.
That wasn't confusing at first, but now it
actually,
is.
Actually, wait, don't they put August General and Iron on the New 52? Like, Justice League?
He's in Justice League International.
Okay.
Which, that was comic... Man, that comic was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Anyways. Yeah.
But yeah.
Anyways. Yeah. But, yeah, but I thought it was cool to see them.
Yeah, he needs to show up.
Yeah. Because they are, like, the marquee Chinese superhero team, and I think people who are familiar with DC would be like, what about those guys?
Yeah. I mean, they were the team that was billed as the... as China's response to superheroes and the Western trend of supervillain. Like, they were billed as China's Justice League. So now if we're going to start, quote-unquote, Justice League of China and label it Justice League of China, like, excuse me, what happened to what happened to the Great Ten here? Like, you have to at least mention them. And I especially like that it's revealed that they're from a different organization or a different ministry or something, and that there's a political relationship between August General and Iron and what's happening with these heroes, and that's going to be antagonistic, and that sets you up for more intrigue along the way, because you know that they're good guys, you know that they're acting in the best interest of the protection of their country, but what does that mean, and how does that interact with Dr. Omen, and we now know as Keenan's mom, who has these ideals of democracy and all, like, it makes that the future of that relationship way more interesting, because August General and Iron is interested in the protection and maintenance of China. Like, he is the patriot. These people, I don't know. Wonder Woman and Batman don't seem like they're diehard patriots. Because when it's brought up, why exactly is the Ministry of Self-Reliance tapped into the cameras of this woman? Like, they're also curious about that. They question these things. So I don't think they're patriots to that level, and Keenan most certainly is not a patriot.
No.
So something's gonna happen there, and I'm so excited for where this comic is going to go. So excited for it.
I think that another interesting thing about forming, like, the Chinese Justice League is, I think Dr. Omen says something about, like, you know, there's a thirst in the media and among the populace for Western-style superheroes. And you almost get the sense that, like, Keenan... Well, it's hard to say, because Keenan, like, kind of puts them on the news, and Dr. Omen says, that was my plan all along. But I do believe that. it was her plan all along, and that this was meant to be kind of a media stunt, really.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I want to know why.
I think she was going to wait for a bigger team, because this is just a trio. This is just the Trinity. But I think maybe she was going to wait for, like, an Aquaman of China and...
No Aquaman.
And a Green Lantern of China. I think she was going to try to wait for some of those things. But no. Kenan just said, fuck that. Yeah. I'm going to do this now because my dick's wagging.
Jesus Christ.
Like, damn, Kenan. Come on, man. Get it under control.
Side note, I really, really love the line where Wonder Woman explains that Dr. Omen thought having an Aquaman would be useless.
Yeah.
That was so good.
The other character that was always in the background, but I'm interested in now, is Ming Ming. Because in the last issue, she comes into her own a bit more, talking to Kenan about Chi and talking to him about, like, giving him references for stuff and how she's actually super young and super brilliant. But I'm interested in where she goes as a character, because how much does she know, right? Does she know Dr. Omen was this woman and has these ideals? Is she in on that part of it? Or is she following Dr. Omen because she's a believer in the Ministry of Self-Reliance? Like, is she the patriot, or is she the believer? I'm super interested to find out what happens to her, because I feel like she has a connection to these people because she works with them so closely. You know, like, Dr. Omen is the executive giving out orders, and Ming Ming's the one who has to make it happen, and she's the one who interacts with these people probably on a much more daily kind of basis. And I don't know where she is. Because obviously she's like, fuck yeah, sign me up for this.
She reminds me of a bit of an Oracle analog.
Yeah, Oracle meets Q.
Yeah. Wait, Q from Star Trek or Q from James Bond?
Q from James Bond.
Okay. I'm not sure
what you say.
It could be Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, and speaking of enemies, I love that Starro makes an appearance in this, because Starro is a very common Justice League enemy and has, you know, been around for some of the like kickoffs of new Justice League runs. He's one of the just perennial villains of the team. It's kind of like you start a new Avengers comic, you know, Kang's a good idea. Kang the Conqueror.
Well, wasn't, like, the first Justice League story against Starro?
Was it? I don't know. I would have to look that one up.
Maybe I...
I just know he's one of those villains I've always associated with the League very, very strongly. And also, he was one of the best episodes of the Superman animated cartoon, too.
Yeah, the first issue of Justice League of America. Oh, wait. So it looks like the first... Well, there's a very famous issue of Justice League where they're fighting Starro. Wait, what issue is this?
Oh, man, I need the Starro HeroClix. That thing's cool.
I have it. Remember, you guys hated playing against it.
Oh, yeah! Okay, yeah, Starro character first appeared in Brave and the Bold number 28 from February, March 1960, and was created by Gardner Fox, blah, blah, blah. Starro is the first villain to face the original Justice League of America. So, yes, you're right. He's the very first JLA villain. So, he's the very first JLC villain.
Man, there's this really creepy cover of, I think it was a cover of a little girl with a Starro on her face. And then she's holding another Starro.
Yeah, that's such a good cover.
Yeah.
There was a good cover in this one, too. There was a couple of good covers in this one. I like the one I like the one where Kenan's on the cover holding a giant, like, gold number one.
That's issue number one.
Yeah, I like that one. And then there's, like, a picture, and it's like there's people around and taking a selfie. It just, like, a lot of these covers really embody his self-centeredness. And there's some good alternate covers that are throwbacks to really old school Superman ones. Like, there's one where Superman, like, can't stop eating hot dogs or something, or else, like, Metropolis will get blown. Like, there's something like that. And so there's a version of this. I think it's issue number three?
Five?
I don't know.
Or maybe
But there's one where I don't know what the words are, but I assume it's just like just a translation into Mandarin of the original. And he's just like, it's dumplings, I think. Like, he's just constantly eating dumplings. It's like, that's fucking beautiful. I love so much about this comic. One thing I will get a little bit critical of, though, is the art sometimes didn't quite work for me. Sometimes the face work was a little bit awkward. And I think it's because there are weird angles, and I don't know how much of it was intentional or not. Like, sometimes when Keenan's being a little bit of a smarmy ass, his face looks funny, and I don't know if it's like one of those weird angles that you like looking up from down below, and it's just not a flattering angle, and maybe we're just trying to see him in a non-flattering way. But there was a couple times when the art like made me a little bit iffy. But then it also really shone in other places, like when Keenan's father died on the airplane. That was really good work by Victor Bogdanovich? Bogdanovic?
Yeah. Yes.
It was good work by Victor.
Jeez.
I'm terrible with names. I'm so bad. Yeah.
But I think the art did a good job of conveying humor, and when it was, you know, I can see what you're saying about the inconsistency, but I think the times when Keenan looks super heroic is when he's doing heroic things, but when he's being funny, his jaw looks softer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His face is a little bit more, is a little bit rubbery to convey the humor of the scene. But like, there's more serious scenes, like where, like at the end where they're visiting his parents' graves, he doesn't look soft. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. like in the first issue when he gets hit in the head with the lunchbox, he has like, you know,
he has like no chin.
Yeah, he looks like Jughead kind of. Or well, there's one scene. It's in issue 6 where he first lands on the plane. And he realizes his invulnerability is back. He looks exactly like Jughead. Like, in my mind. But then in the next one, when he's, like, powering up to punch through the ceiling of the plane, he looks pretty ripped, you know?
Oh, man, I love when he punches, and he's, like, channeling the chi, and it's got, like, the thing going around his fist.
Yeah,
like octagon. Cool. That was sick. I love that effect. That was cool.
Yeah.
What is the relevance of the octagon? I know that the number 8 is... like, is it good luck or bad luck? I feel really dumb. I know that the number 8 is significant in Chinese culture.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Oh, here we go. Let me do Wikipedia. The Bagua, or Pakua, are 8 trigrams used in Taoist cosmology to represent the fundamental principles of reality. Seen as a range of 8 interrelated concepts, each of these 3 lines, each line either broken or unbroken. So that's the octagon with the 3 lines coming out each side, respectively representing yin or yang.
Okay, so number 8 is a lucky number.
Yes.
I think the number I was thinking of was 4. That's bad luck. Oh, yeah. I think it's because, yeah, because 4, the word 4 sounds like the word for death.
Yeah, it's...
But 8 is wealth. Yeah. Right?
Sure.
Yes, 4, I only know it from Japanese, but I think it's the same in Chinese. It's shi, which sounds like death.
Oh, man. I'm looking at, there's a hexagram lookup table, like the interactions between the 8, like heaven, earth, thunder, water, mountain, wind, flame, lake. So if you go heaven, earth, you get pervading. Like, there's a whole thing here. I can go down this rabbit hole all day, but I'm going to hold myself back because that's
was one,
cool.
There was one part where somebody like noted that the S was surrounded by an octagon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But
it was it was one of the times when Batman was bugging him to do his homework, and Keenan had said that he had an S on his chest, and Batman was like, "Excuse me, bro, that is not an S. You need to do your homework." Because that is...
No. I know what you're talking about. I remember that part, but there's another part where
Somebody point out there was an octagon.
I think it was his dad.
Or it was maybe Folding Paper Man before he... You know, when we see him out of his costume, maybe?
Oh man. You know what else I want to look up? When he punches stuff and the octagon and the eight trigrams show up, some of them are red and some of them are yellow. And I'm looking on Wikipedia and it says what the different trigrams mean. And part of me wants to go back and look at that and look at which ones are like yellow and which ones are red in which instance and see if it's like, if he's punching and it's showing up, it's like a series of elements, fire, thunder, wind, whatever. Like if it's mountain and earth, like punching the crap out of it with mountain. Like, I don't know. Oh man. I'm doing this shit tomorrow and not working in the morning because I'm looking this crap up and I'm going to love the shit out of doing that.
Okay, I found what I was talking about. It's page 7 of issue 3. It's the writing group and I think it's Folding Paper Man says the symbol on his chest is in the shape of an octagon. And then Keenan's dad says, I see it, we need to move quickly. But I kept waiting for more to be a follow-up of that. Because, you know, yes, when he punches stuff, we see the octagon, right? But then Wonder Woman and Batman's symbols are also are in an octagon.
And they might be different octagons, because the octagon when he punches is this bagua, this series of trigrams. And that comes from Taoism, which relates to Qi and how he's channeling his energy and all that kind of stuff. So that might relate more to how his powers work, and the octagon on his chest might be more of a political symbol.
Right. And so I'm curious about what the significance of the octagon is.
Yeah.
But it's mostly because it was called out in the...
Yeah, it's called out directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I should like tweet at Gene and see if he'll answer me about that.
We could probably try to run into him. He does a lot of signings and stuff in our area. I'm like fairly sure he's local. The other thing...
Okay, well, if I see him again, I'm going to ask.
Oh, right. I will, too.
Because I'm really curious.
The other thing I appreciated, you were talking about contextual face work as Batman, because he is great. When he is in his costume, he looks like he has a big, strong jaw, and he has, like, the high-mounted mouth. He kind of reminds me of Bruce in Brave and the Bold.
He kind of looks... Like Batman or Dark Knight Returns Batman also.
Yeah, very, very much.
He has a very square head.
And a very, very small mouth with tight little reactions. But then when the mask is off, he's got that ugly as hell bowl cut.
doesn't Keenan say something? He's like, wait, you look like that?
Yes.
It's yeah, so good. He does.
So I love the bowl cut. Because again, he just—it's more reinforcement that he's just a fucking nerd, but he is really good at being Batman.
He says, "Whoa, that's what your actual face looks like."
What a little shit! God damn it, Keenan. All right, you guys want to rate this?
Yeah,
sure.
I feel like we could talk about this and keep talking about little things that we love for like another 3 hours, but I gotta go to bed, so let's go to rating this. Right. David, how about you go first?
Man, so I you know what? This is totally subjective. I'm gonna give it a 5 because I loved this comic. Like it was just so much fun, and it you know, I felt like I had something to say, but the characters you know, there was growth in these 6 issues. Like, it's a really tight story, but it gives you something to look forward to going forward with the reveal at the end about Dr. Omen. And, you know, they could have just made him a Chinese version of Clark Kent, but man, like you said, Andy, he's such an asshole. And I want to see... But even though we know he's this asshole, we see this growth in the 6 issues, and I want to see where it's going to go from here, because it's interesting, you know, and he's still figuring out what his powers are and what it means to him to be Superman and what Superman represents to the people, because at the end we see, you know, I think Jen mentioned it, where the Justice League convinces the Freedom Fighters to fight for the good of the the common people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Keenan, he hasn't internalized that yet. He's still about himself in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a good mix of humor and heart in the story. The art's great. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. So, 5.
Yeah, I'm going to go next. I'm also going to give this subjectively a 5. Heart is a great word to use. But really, you talked about character development a little bit, and we've kind of off and on been talking about this whole episode. And I love that Keenan has a character arc, and he's a different person by the end. Keenan's father, we don't see much, but learns and changes, and we see him grow. We see mm-hmm. Batman grow. We see Wonder Woman grow. We learn more about Dr. Omen. I don't know if she changed. We learned, some of these characters, we are just starting to see that they're going to have an arc, and an arc that's going to be really, really interesting. And there's so many characters in this that change and grow in just 6 issues, which is incredible given the fact that so much of this is new. this is DC, sure, but this is in China in DC, which you never see in the comics that we read. All of the comics we read are set in America, maybe a little bit some in Europe, kind of. But this is basically a whole new world for a lot of this. And, like, the amount of creative effort here, like you said, like it could have just been an analogous Superman, but it's an entirely new set of characters that mean an entirely new set of things and an entirely new world completely created for this comic. And it's just I really, really like this comic so much. And I was expecting, I don't know, because I guess I kind of was expecting a little bit for him to, like, within 3 issues, become the Chinese Clark Kent, but he didn't. Like, he still is the same dumb shit after 6 issues that he was before. He just is, he knows more of himself. Like, in issue 7, after all this growth, I fully expect him to drop a crappy line on a woman. I still expect him to do that, because I don't care how much he changes, he's still Keenan Kong.
I hope he does.
Yeah, I
think it'll be like a Booster Gold kind of arc.
Yeah, where you see him growing, and you know he has the heart, and you know he is a good person, but man, he's a douche. Yes,
exactly. Yeah.
So I mean, you're right, totally subjective, and I can see where this is not the same kind of, like, masterpiece opus that some other things are, but this is really fun to read, really tight, and really, really well done. So yeah, 5. Jen?
Yeah, I'm happy that I spent my money on it.
Yeah.
No regrets.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. 5 as well here. I really liked this. I was genuinely surprised by some of the plot twists, and I was really engaged in the characters. I think they're real people. And mm-hmm. I think one of the best things is that even though we see Keenan, like, we see tragedy befall him in his past and in this comic, it doesn't fall prey to, like, parents in the refrigerator trope, in that he doesn't see his parents die and then that second vow to be a better man, right? Like, he does, but he says, I'm gonna try. And I think that's very real, because people don't suddenly wake up the next day after something bad happens, like, being, you know, a version of themselves that's 1,000 times better than yesterday, with maybe, like, their core quirky traits, which is, I think, something that we often, that we too often see in comics, like these unrealistic reversals after something bad happens. And I think what's going to be really interesting about this is watching him learn what it is to be Superman over time, and then seeing him put that in the context of his role as, like, a Chinese citizen. Because, yeah, you know, they're talking about how he's actually channeling the chi of, you know, Clark Kent Superman, who was the all-American hero. And I want to see what it means to be the all-Chinese hero. And I think that this is a comic that is going to be extremely deep in its, like, it going forward. I only see, like, good, like, engaging plot lines, I think, in the future. So I predict that this one is going to be just amazing when I pick up, you know, the further issues. So five.
Is this the fourth or fifth Jin Yang joint that we've done for the show? I know we did Boxers and Saints, and we can count that as one. We did two of them.
We did
two
Avatar.
Two Avatar comics, and now we've done this. I can't remember if we've done another or not, but I think through all of those, we've only ever given fives for Gene.
He's a damn good writer.
Yeah. Really damn good. I'm thinking about it. Okay, no, he did three Avatar comics, so yeah, we did five. Yeah.
That man knows what he's doing.
That's a sweep for mm-hmm. Gene Yang. I think we've done that for a couple others too, but not with such volume. That's awesome. So where do we go from here? Next week, we're going to wrap up our Best of the Big Two 2016. We're going to read Superwoman, issues 1 to 7, written by Phil Jimenez. I picked up issue number 1 to this off the shelf because it had a Terry Dodson cover. And I was like, I like Terry Dodson, and that cover looks pretty. I'm going to buy it. And I read it, and I was like, are you fucking shitting me?
And I read number 1 because you told me to buy it and read it.
And... since it was kind of on a lot of these lists anyway, and we both had a reaction that we liked number 1, we're going to read it. I will advise you, please go pick up the singles or buy the singles on Comixology. Don't look up the trade. The trade has a spoilery title, and it pisses me off a little bit. But we're reading Superwoman number 1 to 7. Go find the singles, or just read number 1 on its own, and then go buy the trade. Because if you just picked up number... I want everybody listening, and Jen especially, to have the experience of if you picked up issue number 1 off the shelf, and how I want to know your reaction after issue 1 if you had bought this expecting. I don't even know. Yeah.
All right. I'll buy the single.
Yeah. I loved it so much. After I was done, he was like, oh, you fucking kidding me? Anyway, that's next week. That'll wrap up that series. If you want to know what we have coming up after that, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, hit the button that says future shows. We have the next 3 arcs planned out. So what is that? 12, 11 episodes all planned out up there. So if you want to see what we have coming up, if you have a suggestion for what we should read, you can go to welcometocomics.com, hit contact on the left instead of future shows, and send us a message. It goes right to my personal inbox. I'll definitely see it from you. Wink. And you can also listen to all of our 280 past episodes. We're coming up on 300. We've got to figure out something to do. Ooh, maybe 300 could be when we are at Silicon Valley Comic Con. Assuming we get a panel.
So much pressure.
It's not so much pressure. David, we've been doing this for, what, 5 years now?
The people can't see me.
It's fine. Wear your armor. Oh, that'd be sick. You did the whole podcast in your Mando armor.
When is Silicon Valley Comic Con?
It's in April. You wouldn't be back in time.
Yeah, that's not I love this podcast, but I'm not getting up at like ass o'clock in the morning to ramble on a panel when I'm like half dead from lack of sleep.
Yeah, no, I know. We'll have to find a guest person too.
Yeah. Oh man, the weekend before Silicon Valley Comic Con, I'm going to be in Orlando for Celebration. Ooh. It's going to be Con and then Con.
Damn! Yeah. Oh, you're going to get so sick.
I know. Con crud for days. Oh. That sucks.
Not to mention, I'll be going to Disney World too, so I'll probably get sick from that.
Don't get I'm sick. I'm excited don't, to go do not get sick in Orlando, because I do not want you to get sick if we happen to get this panel. I mean, yeah, don't get sick anyway, but, you know, don't get sick.
I'll try. For you, Andy, I won't get sick.
Yeah, not for your kids or your wife, for me. Anyway, on that note, that's it for this week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.